I think this idea of repertoire rich, of learning lots of pieces, we're big fans of, because it actually aids progression, because they're reading, usually, easy pieces. So it means their reading improves alongside their playing, and they're loving what they're doing. As for parents, well, I would sit down with them and spend some time. So it's not at the end of the lesson when you're trying to explain, you've got the next student waiting outside in the hallway or something. You actually take the time, or you make a video and you send it to all your parents. This is why we're doing the 40-piece challenge, the 30-piece challenge, however many you decide.
You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music Co. Great to have you with us again. At the heart of integrated music teaching is the use of creative activities like composing, improvising, transposing, arranging, and playing by ear as the bridge that helps students build meaning and make connections between theory and practice in their learning. By using creativity in a more integrated way rather than as a supplementary lesson activity, we can design novel, memorable, and emotional experiences that students remember and that helps them understand the inherently connected nature of all aspects of music. To find out more about our simple three-step IMT approach and how you can use it in your studio today, head over to topmusic.co/integrated, where you can learn more about the research-informed background to the model and download a one-page reference sheet so that you can try it out today in your studio. Well, today we have two return guests, actually. They were originally on the show back in 2018 in episode number 134, when we were talking all about personal and professional development for music teachers. This is actually today a recording of a live workshop that we held just this week. In fact, today, as I'm recording this, if you'd like to watch the video and see the PowerPoint, etc., then you can do that through Top Music Pro membership over at topmusicpro.com. And you can just grab that on our light plan, which has all 60 or more episodes of our webinars going right back to 2015 that you can watch. Also, along with our monthly free shoot music pack and heaps more. So that's over at topmusicpro.com. Today, we're talking about all things to do with exam preparation at the lower grades. Now, even if you're not teaching students or running students through exams at the moment, or you never have done, there are lots of elements here that you're going to get value from. So we're going to be talking about things like how to know if your student is ready and knowing where they're at in their progression more generally. How to prepare the groundwork so that it's a positive and successful experience when they head to that examination room. The importance of parents in practice and preparation. And some really important discussions about how to be sure your student can learn the music they need to learn in what should be our ideal length of time, which is about 3 months. Definitely not 12 months. And we talk more about that at the start of today's workshop. So this is episode number 321, and you can find the show notes for today and any links we mention over at topmusic.co/episode321. So my guests today, Sharon Mark Teggett and Dr. Sally Cathcart. Sharon first has over 20 years' experience as a reflective practitioner in music education. She's well known worldwide as a highly experienced piano pedagogue, contributing extensively to the literature and resources in many areas of teaching. And Dr. Sally Cathcart, PhD and Churchill Fellow, has many years of teaching experience both as a piano teacher and as a classroom music teacher. She runs a small teaching studio, and teaching the piano continues to be her greatest joy. Sally is a trained Kodai practitioner and principal tutor on the piano teacher's course, and is also a piano syllabus consultant for the ABRSM. And Sally and Sharon together collaborate on resources for piano teachers through their Curious Piano Teachers blog and membership. All right, well, let's tune in to today's workshop that we held a little bit earlier. All about preparing your students for grade one. It's called Supercharge Your Grade One Students. Here we go. So welcome everybody who's been listening to our chat as we've rolled the webinar from the start. It's so great to be here. We haven't had a live event for a little while, so it's wonderful to be back. And thank you for joining us. And yes, for those of you who haven't used Zoom for webinars, as I haven't, I'm learning as we go.
all of you guys who are not on screen right now, you won't be seen on screen. That's fine. So you're all muted and cameras are off, but you're able to chat. So please use the chat. Let us know where you're from, what's going on, and your name or whatever it is, something funny if you'd like to share it. And there's also a separate Q&A panel. So if I could ask, if you do have questions during the presentation, pop it in the Q&A panel. There's a Q&A button down the bottom and we can keep them aside and then I won't miss any of them and I can kind of tick them off as we go. And you're welcome to ask questions at any time. That's what this is all about. There's also the raise hand if you do want to ask a question. I guess I can unmute you or something, but anyway, let's use the question box for now. It's probably the simplest. So let me introduce our two guests. I'm sure many of you will know Sally and Sharon, but very quickly in the way of bios, Sally first, Sally Cathcart, PhD and Churchill Fellow, has many years of teaching experience both as a piano teacher and classroom teacher. She runs a small teaching studio and is this together with Sharon run the Curious Piano Teachers blog and membership site. Sally's Kodai trained and was director of musicianship for the Voices Foundation as well. She was principal tutor on the piano teachers course. That continues today, doesn't it, Sally?
Still, yeah.
In fact, you were doing a workshop just recently, weren't you?
Or is that coming up? That's coming up. The repertoire rich one.
And you're a writer as well. You've written a series of books about musicianship as well. And Sharon from all the way over in Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah.
Sharon has over 20 years' experience as a reflective practitioner in music education, well-known worldwide as a highly experienced piano pedagogue, contributing extensively to literature and resources. And you specialize in creating and delivering courses for piano teachers with hundreds of teachers successfully gaining accredited piano teaching diplomas since 2012 through your coaching programs. So you actually and we've got people in Australia who do the same thing, actually guide teachers through the diploma courses that the exam boards run, right? Because they're actually...
Yeah. Something I've done for about 10 years now, not doing just so much of it this year, having had a baby, but... yes, it's kind of one of my great passions. Something I've really enjoyed doing, especially when you get to do it within a community of teachers as well. So yeah.
Yes, yeah, and it's needed too when people want to try and get through those courses. It's hard. It's just hard to understand. I don't know. The exam boards don't make it particularly easy. So it says host has turned off Q&A. Sorry, Rebecca. I'm just looking here. How do I turn that on?
Although somebody's managed to leave a question already,
Or maybe there's an allow anonymous question, so maybe I turn that on or something. Anyway, we do have a question here, so try again if you'd like, and I'll keep an eye on that. If not, then we can use the chat and I'll just try and keep an eye on questions as they come through. So with that, I'm going to hand over in just a moment to Sally and Sharon, who are going to present, and we're going to be talking about this question of Grade 1 exams specifically, but exams more generally, and try to answer some of those key questions about how do you know if your students are ready? How do you get them ready? How do you make it a good experience? How do you not stress everybody out? How do we make sure it doesn't end in tears for you, the teacher, and the student? How does it all work, and how can we streamline things as much as possible? And if you are in somewhere, place in the world that doesn't use exams, then I do know you're going to get so much value from this anyway, because these are all general pedagogy. We will be talking about exam boards and some of the features and things like that, but there's plenty here that's going to be of relevance generally to music pedagogy. Is that okay, guys? You all set if I hand over to you in just a minute?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Fantastic. And we do have it. A question already, but you may answer some of the ones that are coming through. So I say we'll leave those for now. And as the questions come, are you okay if I interject at appropriate moments? Yep. Fantastic.
That's absolutely fine. Feel free, Tim.
All right. Let's go. I'll hand over to you, Sharon. I think you've got the screen share.
Great stuff. Okay, well, just want to say thank you so much, Tim, for inviting us to do this. It's lovely to be here. And Sally and I have just been chatting before we came on here. So, yeah, we're all super pumped and ready to go. And I am going to share some slides. my bandwidth doesn't seem to be absolutely fabulous tonight, but hopefully, what does it seem like at your end, Tim? Do I seem clear?
You're coming through loud.
That's okay. That's okay. That's good. Obviously, we are the faces behind the Curious Piano Teachers, and we're going to get started with something just a little bit curious. So I'm going to share my slides and just check I've got the sound on, because we're going to start with a very short little video. So we're going to begin with a story.
Death and Shep. Dried. Sloppy. Sloppy. Let. Clean. What. A. Clean. Good. Dog. Said. Pepper. Oh. No.
Okay. So this video is of my, he was then 5-year-old. And this was a video that we made for his grandma Jean, who was at the time out staying for 4 months with my brother out in New Zealand. And I can see that we've got at least one person here from New Zealand. I wonder if anyone's got the connection, what this has to do with our topic. Well, it's this. My son, Ruel, in a school year, is reading about 60 to 80 books in the year, in the academic year, which for us is about 10 months, about 40 weeks. And yet, when we think about piano lessons and we think about students learning pieces for their, whether it's their grade 1 or their grade 5 or their grade 8, very often it is no more than about 3 pieces they're actually doing per year. I know certainly this was my experience. And I think it's a good place for us to start this conversation this evening, because why is this? Why do they get through so many reading books in the year at school, but they are kind of stuck learning just a couple of pieces?
Thank you, Sharon. I think one of the things I really love about that little video of Ruel is how short the book is and how the last page, he goes, oh no. And it's so easy, having struggled a little bit the page before. I do love that connection between how many books they get through at school in a year and actually how many pieces traditionally children have learnt in a year. So we know they can get to grade 8 having learnt 24 pieces, but actually only probably be able to play the 3 that they are currently learning. So what we've got here for you is just a quick overview of these 2 different approaches, what we've called the traditional approach. It's not just us. I think that's quite commonly known as the traditional approach, which is really focused on these 3 exam pieces, maybe taking a year to learn. I'm sure none of you out there are teaching in this way. I'm going to say that quickly first. But I know, and I meet them still, piano teachers who are starting their students over here in the UK in September on the 3 exam pieces they are going to learn for the whole year, and they will take their exam in the following June. That's really still quite typical. So 3 exam pieces in a year. Scales, well, we're starting in September. You will learn all your scales for that particular exam during the year. Sight reading, oral tests, and if you're doing some of the exam boards, you also get a viva voce section. So maybe those should get covered just before the exam. In fact, we know from my research that I did on my PhD, that was the comment. There was a lovely phrase that said a typical approach is that you do the scales and the sight reading just shortly before the exam. So there we go. And where does that lead to? Oh, it leads to a framed certificate on the wall. Fantastic. Does it lead to them being able to play? Probably not. Once that exam is done, you know, I've heard of students who rip up their music at the end because they are so fed up with it. And do they ever want to play that piece again? No, no. Instead, they do some pieces for fun. Surely all playing should be for fun. So let's look at then 21st century teaching, the likes of Tim and what he is promoting, and indeed what we do at the Curious Piano Teachers, where it's more forward thinking, it's more forward looking. And maybe there's just three months to learn three exam pieces. That's all. Even quicker, if it's possible. Scales already known. Yeah, they're not being learnt for the exam. In fact, more scales are being learnt. So it's not just a question of I'm doing these scales because ABRSM asked for them or Trinity asked for them or whichever the exam board is. Instead, you're learning, the student is learning all the a wide range of scales that is appropriate for their standard. Well, sight reading, now this is very different because this is an ongoing and concept-led reading experience. We'll talk about this concept-led idea in a few moments. But the same goes for the oral experience. In other words, it's all integrated. I'm sure some of you will have heard of Paul Harris's simultaneous approach. Integrated, connected approaches, yeah. And the same with the viva voce, that the musical context and the curious questions are ongoing. So what we're doing here is we have students who are pianists for life, not just playing to pass an exam. A student who is really developing a love for music in all its shapes and forms that will take them through for the rest of their life. We're helping them to become a better human being, really. And they will have a solid grasp of skills and concepts that they can take into other pieces. So, the two approaches. And now I'm going to hand back to Sharon, because we're going to look a little bit more about this idea of skills and concepts.
Thank you, Sally. We've been looking there at this idea of a concept-led approach. Skills and concepts, what exactly do we mean by this? So we've got pianistic skills, we've got musical concepts, and pianistic skill is essentially, it's the ability to do something well at the piano. It's action, something that you're actually going to do. So for example, being able to coordinate a staccato touch against a legato touch. A musical concept is an abstract idea. It's common to learning any musical instrument. So, for example, there, understanding the concept of root position triads. It could be understanding the concept of 3/4 time. That's what we mean when we're looking at skills and concepts. And to follow up with an example, this is a piece, King William's March. It's from the current Trinity syllabus. What we've got here is we have a list of things that ideally we would want a student who's going to learn this piece for their grade one exam. These are the sort of things that we would want them to be able to do before they actually go and start to learn the piece. So often, I think, and certainly in my own experience, when I was being marched through the grades, as it were, there were so many things that, so many skills, so many concepts that I didn't already have a grasp of, and I was trying to grasp it as I was learning my three exam pieces. So things that the student, ideally, they will have a grasp of before they start to learn this piece, is to be able to tap and count quavers, crotchets, and minims, and coordinate these rhythms between the hands. So there you can see the rhythms in this short extract, the first 8 bars. Be able to feel the meter of 4 in a bar. Be able to play the scale of D major. Coordinate staccato touch against non-legato touch. If you notice there, between the hands, we have this repeated D minim, which is probably even a little bit more challenging there to coordinate that staccato touch against something that's non-legato as opposed to actually being a legato touch. And the other thing, and this is very typical of grade one pieces, is this moving out of a five-finger hand position. And here in this piece, it's occurring in both hands. And it's occurring really quite frequently. So the student is going to need to be really very confident shifting in and out of this five-finger hand position. Sally, I'm going to hand back over to you again.
Yeah. Do you want to come off the slides for a bit, Sharon, while I just go dig into that a bit more? So when Sharon and I were putting this together originally, which was actually pre-COVID, I think, and we got very excited. She came to my old house and we got very excited. We had all the grade one music at the time around and we started to compare different pieces to see kind of what a grade one piece was. And actually, I think a really important point to notice is whether we're talking grade one or whether we're talking elementary level pieces, they are on a spectrum. A grade one piece compared to another grade one piece is not the same. Now, that particular one, King William's March, for some of the reasons we've just mentioned there, is actually at the very top of grade one on the spectrum. And I'll see if I can just show you a little bit more. So here's the opening of it, just so that you get a sense of it. Now, Sharon mentioned the coordination between the hands. Let's just look at that a little bit more. You've got the left hand doing a repeated D. It's a minim. Now, just keeping that D going, knowing when, because of course you can't play it legato because it's the repeated D. So you've got to know as a student when to let go of that note and then be able to put it back down again. Because at the same time, your right hand is doing quite an athletic thing. Sorry, I should be starting with finger three, it says, okay. So first of all, it's extending out of a five finger position here. So I'm going three, one, three, and then I'm going to move because I'm going to do a finger four there. And then I'm going to move again. Quite complex, and I've got an F sharp to negotiate. And at the same time, I'm trying to get my left hand to come off. So this is a question of the coordination. And I think this sort of thing is one of the hardest things to actually master at this level. Really important to do that you leave one hand behind, then you let go. Do not underestimate, just because you can do it really well, don't underestimate how very difficult that is. Yeah.
Really. I think that's, sorry, Sally, I think that's one of the, that you've picked up, one of the hardest things often for teachers, I think, is because we can all play these things so easily, just getting back into the mind of our younger students can be a real challenge. And so we are overestimate sometimes what they can do or underestimate what we need to prepare them to do. This is just a great reminder that it's so easy to get mixed up and then suddenly you're halfway through a piece and it's taking forever because they're just not quite ready.
Yeah, because they haven't got that basic skill, you know, letting go. So, I mean, what you could do is if you were doing a D major scale, for example, why not get the right hand to do legato and the left hand is letting go and just doing a repeated D like that. That's a really nice kind of way in to begin to get that skill sorted out. I use a term that I say invisible rests. You know, music is full of invisible rests. They're not written in. We know as pianists, we take an invisible rest because you can't play a minim A, a minim D connected immediately to another minim D. As Tim said, you and I know that. Our students don't, so they have to be trained to do that. I just want to point out the last line of this piece as well. Another reason for this being a difficult grade one piece. And I do mean difficult. I mean, really, you've got to have an exceptional grade one to do this one, okay? And I'll show you.
It's almost in the playground area between grade one and grade two.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Because at the end, you get this line. Look at the amount of movement, coordination, confidence that's needed. You've got octave movement in the left hand, so your student has got to know where to send the hand, and then it has to move again, and then it moves back, and then the thumb goes under. Multiple difficulties there. And at the same time, look, this is what the right hand does. Thumb under, over, okay, then it does it again. Third finger over. Then it has a movement. So the hardest bit of all is this bit, where it goes together. The left hand's just moved. And then it has to move back. And then the right hand has to move. And then the thumb goes under in the left hand. Yeah? It's about four different things. And your brain, when you do that, has to go, And you have to show the student how your attention moves from here, right hand, left hand, right hand, left hand. That detailed. And then you're okay. So just moving on to, as I say, that's at least at the top of grade one level. Here's what I would call a level two sort of grade one. And this is the Minuet in C by Reinagle in the current grade one, the latest grade one from ABRSM. So C major. So that makes it a little bit easier to begin with anyhow, because it's probably a position that they are very used to. Five finger position at the beginning for the right hand. Has to do a finger swap here from finger five to finger one. And then once it's done that, it stays there. So one move, left hand, just stays there. So there's one movement in that whole of that first line. You don't get one movement in the whole of the Reinagle in one line. Yeah, there are some other more tricky bits. Let's have a look at the second line. What does that have? So we have to find a new position for this one, but same thing as in the Reinagle. Look how the repeated note there, and slightly harder because you've got a little bit of rotation needed there for the left hand. But actually, once I find that place for that second line, it stays there. So I'm hoping I'm showing you there that that is an easier grade one piece, not without its challenges, and bang on grade one, I would call that. Absolutely bang on grade one. Not too easy. Not too hard, should be learnt very easily within 3 months. Not a problem. If the student is ready and has got that level of skill already. King's William March, that's a tricky piece. It can take an awful lot longer for a lot of students to learn because, as Sharon said, it's at the top of the level.
What we're going to take you through now is this concept of ready for grade one or not. I'm sure I've not been alone in the fact that parents come and they say, you know, is my son, is my daughter ready for grade one? Or should I say, it's what parents used to ask me. Right at the end, we're going to be looking a little bit at parents and how we approach parents. Because, of course, it is about communicating effectively and making sure that our parents understand exactly what is involved when they go to start preparing for grade one. But it's something that Sally and I have certainly become aware of, that it's a lot of teachers kind of give in to the pressure of parents and indeed students themselves saying, you know, when am I going to start learning? You know, when do I get that grade one handbook? So we're going to take you through seven areas that you really want to check that the student is secure on before they are ready to even start thinking about preparing for grade one. This is the first one, rhythm concepts. So how well can my pupil tap and count basic, simple time rhythm patterns? Now, here we have a few examples. So you can see that they are mainly crotchets and quavers and minims. Just here as well, just in case you're curious, this is just stick notation, where we don't have the blobs, because it's just purely rhythm and not pitch notation that we're looking at. So if you have a student who doesn't know how to independently tap these sorts of rhythms in all sorts of combinations, in 4-4, in 3-4, then chances are they will need to do a little bit more work on these particular concepts.
I think it's worth saying at this moment that at grade one, those are the rhythms that they will need to have predominantly. Crotchets, quavers, minims, quarter notes, half notes, and eighth notes. Occasionally, you will find, well, it does depend if you look at some of the UK boards, it does depend which board you go on, but really semi-quavers is a step too far for grade one. It is a step too far. Dotted crotchets and quavers, so dotted quarter notes and eighth notes, you might find those occasionally coming up as long, but the key thing is to have them in consistent places of use. So always on beat one and two, yeah? Then it's usually manageable. Compound time, you on the whole, you won't find it at this particular level. And if you do find it, then do check after the exam that your student has learned and understood compound time, because you often find they will catch it, but they don't actually understand it because it's quite an advanced concept. Sorry, Sharon, just what I...
No, that's fine. Thank you, Sally, for that. It's actually quite a useful and an interesting exercise, because Sally, this is something that we did when we were looking before we created this course, you know, flicking through lots of grade one pieces and just noticing that these rhythms were cropping up time and time again. You just mentioned the dotted quarter note, dotted crotchet quaver. We can see that here in this particular piece. It doesn't happen that frequently, but here we do have it at bar 8. And then time signatures. Sally?
So in time signatures, we come up to the same thing. We were just talking about that, really. 2-4, 3-4, 4-4, those are the times you're going to come across. You'll probably find C as well for common time. And things like you can have a lot of fun with your students finding out whether they can hear a time signature. They can they tap it? You know, they might do 2-3. 1-2-3, creating some little movements. You can play a lot. You can play something in 3-4 or 4-4. Can they hear it? And can they tell you how many beats there are in a bar? So this will show you how well they're listening. Of course, it prepares them for the oral side of things as well. And it will help them when they come to actually learn pieces in these different time signatures.
And then we've got pitch shapes. You can see here there are a couple of flashcards, and the question is, how well can my pupil read and play these various patterns? Obviously, this at this level, you're wanting them to identify landmark notes. For those of you who do landmark notes, that would be interesting. How many of you on the call refer to landmark notes and reading intervallically? So again, giving them a little bit of a test and figuring out how good they are with shape reading.
Can I just go back to that one again? Because I do think this reading is a really, really important part of the preparation that you need to be doing. Because Sharon said something very important. She said, read and play. What a lot of children will do, and they don't know they're doing it, and the teachers don't know that the children are doing this, is that the children will imitate the teacher. And they will hear the teacher play it, and they will copy what they hear. Now, that works for a limited amount of time, usually till about grade three. And what happens then, if the child isn't reading, then the music gets too hard. They can't coordinate and decipher the notes on the page. And that's the point where they will stop learning, because it's got boring, because the pieces are too hard, because they feel defeated by the music. So do be careful. This is a really important thing. Is the child reading independently? That's not to say they will be reading every single note that's on the page, but they should be reading the patterns. They should be recognizing certain keynotes, like the landmark notes. And then from that point onwards, then you start to kind of fill in, it's like a jigsaw, you fill in the inside bit with reading all those shapes and patterns in detail. So look out for blagging, as I like to call it. Are your students blagging their reading? Yeah. Sharon.
Really, a really good word there, blagging.
I've never heard this word. Is this a British thing?
Oh, it must be then.
Blagging.
To blag, you kind of, yeah, just sort of chance it a little bit.
Fudge it.
Go with the fudge.
Fudge it. Exactly.
Yeah. Fudge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other thing just to draw everyone's attention to here is the way we're separating these elements out, because when we're getting our students to read and play, it's making sure that we're actually, you can see from here the notated illustrations, there is not rhythm to read. It is purely the fact that we just have blobs. The focus then is on pitch shapes. And even for a student, what sometimes I will get them to do is to get them to rhythmically play each note that they see, maybe three or even four times, and then build that sense of looking ahead to the next note and being prepared, going, okay, yes, I'm moving up another step, playing it a few times, looking ahead. So there are different ways that you can do these, but the idea is that they are not simultaneously reading rhythm. And I think it was something that was, certainly for my own teaching, it was really powerful when I was separating out the concepts of pitch and rhythm. I know my students do a lot of rhythm work that is just purely, tapping and then putting them together at a later stage. Sally, over to you for key awareness.
Okay, so we've talked already about D major, and we've talked about a little bit about C major. Generally, at this elementary grade one type of level, these are your typical keys, and you'll find a lot of the pieces will be in these keys. Occasionally, you might find F sharp major. Yes, you might, because it might be a piece on the black notes and pentatonic and stuff like that. But I think generally, these are the keys that you will find appearing, and your student should be familiar with these keys. Whether or not they need to play them in an exam, that is not the point. It's, are they familiar with it? Because they will be learning through doing these their physical movements at the piano. It's like learning their ABCs, learning how to write. They need to get that physical kinesthetic movement within them. So can they say and write the letter names of the scale and the tonic triad? Say and write. So here we are, we're underpinning that reading again, whilst not expecting them to read a particular piece of music. Can they play the scale with the correct notes? That's one thing. You might even add into there, can they play the scale with the correct fingering and the correct notes? I have all things separated out again. So are they playing the correct notes? Yes, that's often the case. Are they playing the correct fingering? No, not usually. Are they playing the correct notes with the correct fingering? Probably not, yeah? But this is just to kind of get you started on that. Can they play the scale with the correct notes? Can they read the music in this key? Doesn't have to be very hard. Can you give them one of those pitch flashcards, for example, in the key that you've been dealing with, and can they read the music in that particular key? Again, I would probably keep the rhythm separate at this point. So all they're focusing on is the pitch reading and the shapes and the patterns in their arms, in their fingers. So their fingers are starting to think in these different keys. Sham.
And there's even some things just talking about playing the scale with the correct notes. Because sometimes, I don't know if anyone here experiences this, where you get a student and they're kind of figuring out the sounds as they go along. Actually, maybe instead of getting them to play it first, get them to, and you can, to make this a little bit more fun, you could actually be bouncing and catching a ball. So the teacher bounces the ball to the student. And what you're doing is you are calling aloud the letter names of that particular scale. So it would be F, G, A, B flat, C. And of course, coming down, F, E, D, see, it gets so much trickier. So just being a little bit creative, not always starting the scale going up either. You know, play me a descending scale of D minor. So lots of different things that you can do just to check on how aware the student is with certain keys. We have touched on this one already. Beyond the five finger position, can they shift? Can they move? Looking at the pieces in grade one, and indeed in just the broader repertoire, and noting, you know, how frequently does the right hand, does the left hand move outside those five finger patterns? Are they having to lift and move the hand completely? Is there the need for a thumb under or a third or a fourth finger over? And just being really aware of when that happens.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside.
So, storytelling. We need them to have experienced the joy of making music, the joy of connecting with the stories behind a piece of music, and encourage them to use their imagination and recognize that music isn't just flat and on one level, but can really have a lot of interest, whether that's dynamics or whether that's different colors from articulation. So I'm just going to use one of the grade one pieces actually that's in the new syllabus, and that is as an example here. But you can take any piece you like, really. But this one is Sneaky Business by Martha Mayer. Now, I was saying to Sharon that this is one of my favourite pieces. I've had many students learn this and really love it, you know, to be sneaky. And this could even happen before, I would suggest, they start to even consider this piece. They don't need to know it's an exam piece. Talk about being sneaky. I will often be sneaky like that. It's not an exam piece. They don't know that. I know it, but I introduce it so that they get used to the sound. I'll stop talking and play, I think. Left hand, and I tell you, they love learning how to play that. groovy, like isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And even I would say straight away, they'll want to be able to play that. And they will go away and work out how to play that. And then, of course, what makes it really sneaky? You can talk about the qualities of the word sneaky. How do you move when you're sneaky? You know, I would say, why not get them to move around the room? And then can they come and play it with that same really tiptoey type of feel to it? And then it has that lovely crescendo that goes. I love doing that sort of thing. And you know what? If you share your love with your students, you get enthusiastic about it. They do what you all did, which is smile. And they go, oh yeah, I would like to do that as well. So it's not a secret, the fact that I like this piece. They know. And they get enthused by it and they want to go away and connect with the character of the music that's there and bring it to life and tell the story that's behind there. So you could send them away. Can they create a story? Can they write a story? Or if they're not writers, can they draw the picture and bring it back to you? Or can they find a poem that would sum up this piece? Really making their musical imagination really, really spark and vivid and realise that it's not notes on the page, it's sound that we communicate with each other.
I'm not sure if any of you have tried it, but we had a member who had this great idea. This is MJ, and she would sometimes not show the student the title of the piece and she would play it and ask them to come up with what the title should be. What is the story being told? And for a piece like that, you know, they could come up with Cops and Robbers, or I mean, it could be, I don't know, Sailors on a Ship or like anything. But it was such a magical sort of thing. It's such a simple little idea. And I would love teachers to try that. Just one little takeaway from this is you can give it a shot. Has anyone tried that?
I think I've tried it in the past once or twice with certain pieces. And, of course, it's never the names, and it shouldn't be ever the name that the piece is given, but it is lovely. And it's kind of giving ownership to the student then, isn't it, and saying, what do you think? Yes. What do you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Sorry. I just saw that someone asked what the name of the piece was, but we already got that from someone else answered it. So thank you for answering the question. Carry on.
Great. No, all I was going to say was I think that for students to have a storyline can make all the difference in the song, in the sound world that they create. I remember once having a student learn a piece and build up a whole story about how it was a postman on his travels delivering cards and mail, and you know, at different sections, the piece was really quite, there was a lot of different musical ideas. There was a lot of becoming faster, becoming slower, a lot of dynamics. And I remember she just really hadn't been feeling it. And we thought, okay, let's build a story around this. And, you know, the moment that she was playing the bit where Postman was being chased by the dog and where she got bit, you know, he or she got bit by the dog. I mean, it just makes it so much more exciting when you've got, you know, a musical moment and where they're actually imagining something. And absolutely, you know, if they're coming up with the storyline or with the title and making it their own, it's incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. Well, the boy that did this in the example, because I took him for a masterclass, and the title he came up with, I still remember, was The Midnight Stroll of Whiskers the Cat. This kid's very imaginative. And there, you could just about hear these cats screaming and running around and chasing each other. It was just brilliant. Brilliant. Great idea. I can see people saying, that's a cool idea. I'm going to try it out.
Yeah. I'm teaching this piece tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let's move on. We have just got another couple of things to really quickly share. I'm looking at the time. How can it be that time already? I don't know. Okay.
It's called having fun.
Is all good. Okay. And then of course, having gone through all of that, you know, are they ready? Are they ready to start preparing for their grade one? You want to get some sort of commitment from those students. And you actually give them statements like this. and get them to sign off on it. You know, I am prepared to do more piano practice each week starting now. I understand that I have a lot of work to do. I know that my teacher and parents will help me when I get stuck. I really want to get better at playing the piano. I think I'm ready to start preparing for grade one. So it does give a certain amount of responsibility. It just places it onto the student, because it's at the end of the day, it is the practice that they do between lessons. And as I always like to say, that, you know, typically you've got a 30-minute lesson. You have got something like 10,050 minutes between lessons. And of course, it is all about what happens in between lessons that makes the difference, which brings us onto the practice triangle. And I think that it is incredibly valuable when we as teachers have the parents on board. If the parents aren't on board, it is, particularly with those younger children, it becomes a lot more of a struggle. So I'm just going to give five things that we can be encouraging our parents, our piano parents, to be doing. The first thing is actually to attend lessons and to sit in on lessons. I remember having a parent who did that on her children's, I taught her two daughters, and you know, her involvement was phenomenal. It really made a massive difference. The second thing is, parents are the ones who can help establish a routine at home. Goes back to those 10,050 minutes between lessons. It's really important that parents are encouraging, especially again for those younger children, that they are getting some sort of a routine. The third thing is for parents to be a part of the practice. Sometimes it's just, you know, being able to sit down with the child and to encourage them. The fourth thing is to give positive and ideally non-critical feedback. So it could be, again, if they have been sitting in the lesson and maybe the teacher has been working on posture, for the parent to know to look out for that particular thing and to maybe just say to their child, "I love the way that you're sitting today. You know, you look just like a pianist." That can be really important as well. And the fifth thing is for parents to give positive choices. So, for example, okay, it's Wednesday evening and we're going to get practice done. Are you going to do your sight reading at the start or the end? So there are really simple ways that we can get parents involved. I know for Sally and I, we recognize this. And even as a parent myself, I know how important it is to sit down and to make that time. It's not easy. Parents are busy. But when we communicate with our piano parents, it makes a big difference. And I know, Sally, something that you love to do is have that coffee and cake chat. If you know anything about curious piano teachers, we're big into our coffee and our cake.
So I will make sure, in fact, I've got to sort them out in the next couple of weeks with all my piano parents, that at one point in the year we will have, and I teach online, so it's going to be an online coffee and cake chat or biscuit chat about how things are going, what the problems are. This is so essential if you're going to get help a student to get ready for an exam, because it's about collaboration and communication within that triangle. So all three parts of the triangle, it's not just down to you, the teacher, all three parts have got to be working in order for that to be a really, really successful outcome. And by that, I don't mean that the student gets a really high mark. What I mean is that student loves learning. The exam at the end is just kind of the cherry on the cake. What matters is the learning that goes on that journey towards it. That is the key thing. The parents are on board. If you talk to them, if you've explained what the situation is, what they need to learn, the student needs to learn, how much time needs to be spent, get them on side, And then the whole thing becomes so much easier. I know it's not always possible to do that, but it's our job to try and make that happen as much as we can.
I think that idea of giving them some pointers about what to ask, what to look for, to not be too critical, to give feedback, that's certainly helpful for non-musical parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just about it, really. I think that's we've summed up, gone through everything that we had, so we're ready for any questions, Tim, if people have got them.
Yeah, well, there was an early question from Anne, there was also a question about how can we access these slides, and the flashcards look great and all this kind of stuff. So I'm going to tell you in just a second about the course that Sally and Sharon have created that is in our membership, and I'll give you a quick look at it. It's unbelievably comprehensive. So I'll talk about that in just a second. But Anne asked earlier about whether students can compose their own pieces for ABRSM exam grade one for piece number 3. Is that, do you know?
No. It depends on what kind of exam you're doing, because now for ABRSM you've got the practical exams where you do 3 pieces in front of a live examiner, or you've got the performance grades, and these are recorded exams where you do 4 pieces. Now, from those 4 pieces, 3 of them have to be from the syllabus, from the books, from the syllabus. The 4th piece is an own choice piece. Now, the student can compose their own piece, but it has to be submitted in advance because it has to be at the level of the rest of the exam. Okay? So that I think is kind of the answer to give.
Yeah. And I think, we've got to remember that there are many exam boards now and many more than there ever were. And so sometimes if you have students that want to do more composing and have those opportunities to play different pieces and not such a strict small set of pieces, then maybe a different exam board's a better way to go. And to look into them, I encourage all teachers to look at all the different options that are out there. I think it's important.
Yeah, because Trinity do actually have an option for a composed piece, I think a self-composed piece as one of the pieces. So that might be the other thing. What I'm actually waiting for is something that is completely different model from all the rest of the exam boards. But over to you too.
Oh, okay. We'll come back to that one. So I don't know if you saw my Instagram yesterday, but I was wearing this stupid hat because it's our birthday, actually. We've just passed 7 years of Top Music Pro membership. Thank
Happy
you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. That was very exciting. Here we go. Oh. I should have known that was coming, shouldn't I? I would have done the same thing to you. Thank you. Thank you, Sally. And, of course, that's a skill that all our students should be able to do, but let's not go down. That's another whole webinar. Anyway, let me show you quickly. This is the course that Sally and Sharon have created. This is a bit of a sneak peek because we're actually not releasing this until next week. So this is coming up on the 20th. We're releasing this. And just to show you, here's the module content. Like, this is quite epic. What you've had today is the smallest taste of this course. I cannot believe the detail in this for teachers who are looking to prepare students for grade one, but not just grade one. These strategies are going to work for all the different grades, preparing the groundwork, the technical work, the oral piece, oral training, the sight reading, and not leaving it to the end because we really don't want to be doing that, building the technical work, supporting pieces, understanding the criteria, preparing performance anxiety on the day, what to do. Oh, my goodness. It's just fabulous what you have created. And this is just one example of one of the modules. Each of them has video instruction and a handout, things like access to those flashcards. Here's Sally at the piano talking about one of the other modules on the exam, the exam day experience. So all of this, for those who aren't familiar, is over in our Top Music Pro membership. This is what it looks like. This is our dashboard where you can see what you've started and resume where you've left off. You can see our upcoming events. We have multiple events each week for teachers to get together and either work or discuss or whatever it is. And this is our whatever's new in our academy. Our academy is where we keep all our courses and workshops and teaching videos and things. One of the most popular ones for us is these, what we call piece by piece workshops by Jana Williamson, where she takes pieces of the intermediate classical teaching repertoire, all these famous pieces like the Rondo alla Turca, and goes through and explains a little bit about the background and then how to teach. And even if you've taught this a million times, I love these videos because you can always pick up something new by watching another teacher teach. And she also creates handouts that you can download to go along with it. And these have just been so, so popular. Really, really fantastic resource. And that goes together with our 50 courses. Over on the right-hand side, you can see here, you can choose by what kind of category of resource you're looking for, or by subject. So if you're interested in group teaching, for example, I can click group teaching and we can find all the resources we've got on that topic from different teachers around the world. And I was just popping into the activity feed. So this is where you can ask questions, share videos. We've recently been doing a new challenge, practice challenge for teachers. So teachers have been sharing their practice. Oh, there's a gift. There's a gift. Unexpected gift. Thanks, Tara. Tara's on our team. She's on a call at the moment. This is the kind of thing you can just, you know, one click, and we do have our app as well. One click in the app, ask a question, and get unstuck, which I think is super, super helpful. So if this is of interest to you and you're not currently a member, we are doing a great special offer. Just type into the box, the top of the URL bar, topmusic.co/curious. And you'll be able to find out all the details. We only offer a super special deal like this once a year. So this is your opportunity. If you've thought about coming and joining us, then this is the page to do it on. And I'll put a link to that in the chat as well. So there was an earlier question or two comments that I noted as well. Let me just put the link in for people. TomMusic.co/curious. People were talking about the 40-piece challenge. Interested in your thoughts on that one. And Rosie asked, just in regard to large numbers of pieces, that she finds it hard to explain why to parents. Perhaps parents who've come through the traditional 24 pieces over 8 years, tips for explaining it, the new process to people.
I think one of the things that I'm just going to pick up on is that when you've got something like the concept of the 30 or the 40 piece challenge, it's really important that if your student is a kind of a grade one level student, that they're actually not playing 30 to 40 grade one pieces. They are playing pieces that are easier than that. In most cases, way easier than that. You know, they're actually picking up things like, again, going back to the video of my son reading slowly. But he's going through lots of books, and where you've got the word children or the word cat, that he's picking up and he's seeing that time and time again. Yeah, I think it's something that is probably misunderstood. It's the fact that we're actually getting them to play pieces that they can go through in about a week, or they can sit down and they can instantly access.
Yeah, I think this idea of repertoire rich, of learning lots of pieces, we're big fans of, because it actually aids progression, because they're reading, usually, easy pieces. So it means their reading improves alongside their playing, and they're loving what they're doing. As for parents, well, I would sit down with them and spend some time. So it's not at the end of the lesson when you're trying to explain, you've got the next student waiting outside in the hallway or something. You actually take the time, or you make a video. And you send it to all your parents. This is why we're doing the 40-piece challenge, the 30-piece challenge, however many you decide. Because we know that, and use the analogy like we've just shown here about reading. Parents usually get it if you connect it to something they are already familiar with, like their child learning to read. And this idea of, would they be sent, if your child was sent home with three books and were told they're going to read these books this year, that's all they're going to read, and when they've finished it, they're going to read it again, and we know it's got some very, very hard words that they're going to really struggle with, but if they keep practicing it, then at the end of this year, by 9 months' time, they'll be really good at it. Parents get that. They absolutely get that. So you then have to skillfully guide the conversation so that they get the connection between what it is you're doing and the progression that is going to happen anyhow.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's, and I wonder for some parents who've been through the traditional system, just asking them, you know, how was it for you to learn three pieces a year if you did? And do you really want your child to do the same thing?
And can you still play now?
Yeah, that's right. Or did you finally get to grade eight and quit? Thankfully, you were able to quit because you'd finished. I mean, isn't it just, it's just criminal that's how it's ended up. And Sharon, I love that idea of the 1 week pieces too. Just super short, simple, easy pieces. Yeah, sorry, Sam.
And it's the motivation they get from actually being able to learn something, no matter how short or how easy, being able to learn something fresh in a short space of time.
Yep.
The point I was going to make is the other thing to say to parents, do they want three certificates on their wall and the child never opening the piano and not able to play a thing? Or do they want a child who runs back to the piano and hasn't got a single certificate, possibly, but actually has all these pieces at their fingertips and is developing this lifelong love for music and the piano?
Mm. Now, we've just passed the top of the hour, so I think we'll start to wrap things up in a minute. I think there's a couple of your members as well who have joined us and have asked about whether this course is in one of your monthly bundles. Are you able to just speak to that very quickly?
Yes, it's inside. It is. If you go into the curiosity boxes section, scroll down. I think it's probably on this second or third line. If you scroll down, it's kind of right at the top there. And it's available there too.
Great. So that was for Sarah and
Search
for it, yes.
Fantastic. Great. I don't think I saw any other question. Oh, sorry. One more from Wendy. She said that she's heard that a student should expect to practice an average of 450 hours in total before they're ready to take an ABRSM grade one. I'm not sure where that came from, but she says, do you think this is a viable figure?
Okay. I know where that came from. It came from some research by Sue Hallam, Professor Sue Hallam, when she was looking into exam preparation. This is 450 from the start of learning. And that isn't just practice, it's lessons, it's informal learning, it's any kind of playing that is going on, including choir singing and stuff like that. So it's not sitting for 450 hours at the piano and just playing. We gather our experience, and this goes for children just as much, in a whole variety of ways. So some of it will be, obviously, at the piano, but other parts of it won't be. So, don't know, actually, more than that. But just to say, it is a figure that is out there, but there just isn't enough research into it at the moment for us to say whether or not that is absolutely accurate.
Mm. And depends on the student, as Katerina just said. And Donna, I've already replied in regard to copies of the slides. We're not providing copies of the slides, but all of what we've talked about and 10 times more is available in the amazing course that's available inside Top Music Pro. So head over to topmusic.co/curious and you can get access at our special birthday discount price. And I think we might wrap things up there to let everyone head off and do what they need to do. We've got a lot of teachers who've already popped off to go and teach. So thank you so much for coming on today. It's been such fun hanging out with you both.
It's been our pleasure.
And honestly, the course, as I was going through it, it actually made me think, oh, my goodness, I really should be thinking more about. You made me really think about what we should be doing when it comes to exams. Because it's really easy, I think, to be kind of slapdash about it and just go, oh, yeah, okay, well, here are the pieces I love teaching. Which one would you like to learn? And one of them might be the one that you played that's at the top level. And then we realize, why are all our kids struggling with this? Well, that's a hard piece. So, you know, you've really made me think more. What does the student know? What are those technical challenges? What should they know before we start? And making sure that this process is just part of their learning experience at the piano, at any instrument, and not this terrible thing that they've got to just try and grip towards and hang on for dear life every year because it's just miserable. Oh, so, yes, thank you so much.
It's been our pleasure, Tim. Thank you so much for asking us along, and it's been great fun to be here with you and sharing thoughts across the oceans.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, look, we'll wrap things up. Thank you to all everyone who joined and said hi in the chat. Appreciate you. Hopefully, you can come and explore some more of those resources if it's been of interest to you. Otherwise, we'll see you around, see you at conferences. And we'll keep in touch online. So thank you very much, everyone. I'm going to sign off and wish you all the best. Thank you. So just a reminder that if you want to watch the presentation that you just heard today, it's all available to our Top Music Pro members, even on our Lite plan. And today was actually just a quick overview of a comprehensive video training course that will be released next Tuesday, the 20th of March, 2023, inside our Top Music Pro membership. This is a course that Sally and Sharon have created. It's over 20 modules with worksheets, flashcards, you name it, everything you could possibly need to really go incredibly, have your students do incredibly well at their grade one exams. And if you'd like to grab that amazing once a year birthday discount that I talked about right at the end of the workshop and join us on a studio plan where you get that course and all our other 50 courses and everything else we offer, at the best price we offer, we're going to extend the discount that I mentioned until midnight Eastern time this Sunday. So if you're listening to this soon after publication, head over to topmusic.co/curious to grab that offer. As I say, we do this only once a year for our birthday and it doesn't last very long. And if the page is still up, the discount's still available. So go check it out, topmusic.co/curious. Over on our guitar podcast this week, episode number 41 is all about a whole body learning approach to guitar lessons with Paul Meyer. Now, Paul's been a guest many times on this show, so most of you will know his name and the work that he does is extraordinary. So to see him collaborate with our head of guitar, Michael, on whole body learning for guitars is something that you don't want to miss out on. So go check that out, topmusic.co/guitar041. Or just search for the Top Music Guitar Podcast on whatever podcast app you listen to this one on. All right, that's the end of the show this week. Next week, we're diving a topic that has been very popular in the last 6 to 12 months, and that's group teaching. And more specifically, we're going to be talking about the two biggest problems with group lessons and how to solve them with our two guests, Greg Genta and Daniel Patterson. And Daniel Patterson's a name you'll know from a few other shows that he's been on as well. Always great to catch up with Daniel, and I'll be meeting Greg as well. So until then, I'm Tim Topham. You've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Can't wait to speak to you again this time next week. Bye-bye, everyone. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.